The official podcast of The Next CMO, hosted by PlanUp. The Next CMO is a thought leadership podcast for those that are CMOs or want to become one. My name is Kelsey Kraft, and I am the Senior Marketing Manager.
And I'm Peter Mahoney. I'm the CEO of PlanUp.
For this week, we are honored to have Scott Finlow, the Global CMO for Food Service at PepsiCo, as our guest. Scott has worked for PepsiCo for the last 21 years. Wow, that's a long time. And Scott has led the brand development, innovation, and growth opportunities in the beverage, food, and nutrition business. As you know, our target audience is senior marketing executives and those who want to be a marketing leader in the near future. With that in mind, we would love to get inside your head of a senior marketing executive at a global brand like PepsiCo as you embark on the launch of the new SodaStream Professional product line. How you doing today, Scott?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. Yeah.
She did just throw a little shade on you, that long time thing. I'm not sure where that came from. It was a little rough, Kelsey.
It's okay. I don't, you know, as long as I don't look it.
That's right.
Okay.
I think, Scott, you and I are probably similar vintage. This happens a lot when you have a slightly younger host of our show. But please continue, Kelsey.
Got to keep things interesting, guys. But let's start up with a basic question. So how does one, you know, become the CMO of a division of PepsiCo? Can you tell us how you got there?
Absolutely. It's a bit of a long, winding road. What I'd say is the headline is you probably need to have developed a range of different experiences across a range of different businesses. And certainly to become a CMO, you've got to have demonstrated a real connection with the consumer. And you've got to have demonstrated some great results at a PepsiCo. And the way you do that at PepsiCo is you got to work together with other people. You can't get anything done alone at PepsiCo, so you got to show that you can collaborate effectively and drive results. And it's a culture of growth and of amazing brands. So that's how I've done it. I've had an amazing tour. I've had the benefit of working in the U.S. business. I've been overseas and worked out of our Asia Pacific markets in a variety of different countries on the food and beverage business, and had the amazing experience to greenfield new businesses in emerging markets and launch some big brands in big scale Asian markets and do some innovation work and some insights work along the way. So really fortunate about the experience that I've been able to have at PepsiCo, and excited to be here talking to you guys.
Yeah, I really agree with the idea of a diversity of experience, Scott. And I think today's CMO really has to come at the function from a very broad perspective, understanding, like you said, the consumer, the customer journey, but also really has to understand a combination of, really has to understand the business in a very meaningful way. I think that may not have been the case a generation or two ago, but really having a diversity of understanding. And did you in your role end up sort of doing roles in sort of different functions of PepsiCo along the way? So you probably didn't take a marketing path all the way through, is that right?
I didn't. No, I'm someone who came to marketing indirectly. I started in the sales organization and then was in the marketing organization. I spent some time in the insights organization in a variety of different roles, and now back in a marketing role. So, yeah, I think, you know, there are always kind of pure play marketing experiences, and you can build, real expertise in certain areas. And I think there's merit to those areas as the world of marketing gets more complicated in areas like performance and digital and technology. But to your point, I think the CMO needs to have that breadth. And, you know, a CEO wants a CMO to be someone who can show a path to growth. And to do that, you've got to understand the levers on the business, to your point. But a marketer has to be the chief storyteller as well. And you need to be able to articulate where the business is going and lead the organization there. I mean, there's a lot of amazing people in big companies like PepsiCo and other organizations who are outstanding in the various functions and the work they do. But typically it's marketing that has to articulate 3 to 5 years out, you know, where the business needs to go and how to get there. It's a fantastic place to be, but it's not for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting, you mentioned having a background in sales. It's always an interesting transition for marketers to make from sales to marketing, because you alluded to the fact that your time frame has to expand fairly significantly. You have to think vision. You have to think, what's the story arc for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, especially as you're sort of building a broad brand vision and brand story for a global brand or set of them at PepsiCo. And did you find that transition was hard? You know, go from, I got to make my number to, oh yeah, I got to do that too, but I also have to focus on the strategic side.
Yeah, I probably had a natural balance for the strategic side, so and creativity. So it's maybe a little bit easier for me to on that bit. But, you know, PepsiCo, we've got this great phrase, which I think helps. And it's that you got to be able to move fluidly from the balcony to the dance, right? So you got to get in the mix and you got to be down there and you got to know the business and how to get stuff done. But you also got to be able to get back up and see where you're going and what's happening and the lay of the land, et cetera. And I think, you know, at PepsiCo, you're, you know, sometimes you're doing that a lot within a 30-minute meeting, but certainly you need to do that over the course of over a year.
That makes a lot of sense. Let's pivot a little bit and talk about the recent news that you guys have been working on and related to SodaStream and the new product launch that's going on there. And I wanted to ask a little bit about sort of what begat this relationship and the acquisition of SodaStream. We of course, have been, everyone I think in tech has been following SodaStream for a long time, because it's this really interesting company that came out of that really innovative Tel Aviv market where some amazing companies have come out. And so I'd love to hear a little bit about sort of what made SodaStream an attractive acquisition in PepsiCo. I think it was about 2018, right?
Yeah, correct. I think the headline is it's strategically accretive from a business perspective, in terms of it adds to the a significant element to our hydration portfolio, so to speak, in terms of the product portfolio, in terms of the in-home play. It's accretive in terms of the number of markets it plays into. It actually is strong in a number of different markets around the world that helps us significantly. And I think it's accretive from a purpose point of view too. You know, it helps us down the path of our mission to you know, be a world where plastic need never become waste. And, you know, SodaStream is clearly a global leader, if not the global leader in that purpose. So I think in those three areas, super helpful for us.
Now, what do you think about the relationship between Pepsi and SodaStream brands, and how do you expect that relationship to change over time?
It's complementary, I think. You know, anytime you bring two companies together, you got to marry culture and you've got to figure that stuff out. You know, I think we all know that when you do acquisitions, that's typically what, you know, what you plan least for. And oftentimes becomes a bit of a barrier, but we haven't seen that. And I think as a company, we've got amazing leaders, guys like Jim Andrew, who led the transition under Ramon's leadership. And you know, I think Jim's done an outstanding job of bringing that business in, respecting you know, the local culture, expertise, leadership, et cetera, essentially what we acquired. While also bringing the complementary benefits of a PepsiCo, all of our global R&D, all of our, you know, global scale and go to market, you know, some of our marketing power as well. And I think the work we've done on SodaStream Professional has been a good example, I think, of building on that acquisition and starting to demonstrate the power of a portfolio that can enhance the consumer experience as well as the business.
Yeah, so actually, that's probably a good opportunity to help people understand, or listeners understand in general, a little bit more about sort of this particular platform extension that you're working on. So tell us a little bit about the SodaStream Professional line.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we call it a hydration ecosystem. You know, the way to think about it is it's a digitally connected platform comes in a couple of different forms, like a sort of a big standalone unit as well as a countertop unit. And what it allows is it allows a user, typically in either a workplace or a college or university environment, there are others like lodging, but allows those users to essentially personalize and authenticate and track their, their beverage, their water consumption. So that's fundamentally what it allows a user to do. It's beautifully designed. It's got, there's a simple app that allows you to essentially track and save your purchases and connect to the equipment itself. And that allows you to essentially have a relationship, call it almost a loyalty relationship with your hydration. That is what we learned consumers were looking for. And the whole proposition is grounded in insights in that sense.
Yeah, I was really fascinated by the product range as I started to look into it a little bit more. And the thing that was really fascinating to me was how integrated the whole thing felt, right? And this feels like, and I don't know how this is standard PepsiCo fare or not, but this feels like it was probably a big technology technology launch that may not be certainly how I think about PepsiCo in general, but the idea that it is deeply integrated with sort of this mobile application concept, right? So you have a mobile app that can control your preferences. You have a physical container that's got barcodes on it, so you can sort of, I assume, sort of wave it near it and it will dispense for you, which is kind of cool because it makes the experience, I assume, also touchless, which is pretty handy in the pandemic environment that we're dealing with now. So how was it dealing with something that feels like it was probably a big software and technology launch inside PepsiCo? Was that different, or is that sort of something that you're used to, but we just don't know about it as much as we should?
Well, I think it's it definitely is. It was a different launch in that sense, to your point, which made it more complicated. You know, we're very good at putting beverages in a bottle or a can or snacks in a bag, and that's our core competency. Call them analog, food and beverage launches. So yeah, this one, I think, set up some different challenges, but we leaned into it from day one, and like all great innovation, you got to start working with different partners and stakeholders from day one if you're going to do that. And then I think the other thing we did and recognized is we thought a bit like a technology company as we did it. We said, okay, let's get something out the door. Let's get a version 1.0 out the door. Let's get it with some customers. Let's test and learn. What's the user experience like? How's the technology working? What's the back end? How's that working? What's the real estate, sort of learning that we need to get in terms of placements? So we moved fast and we put some betas out to get some great learning. And that's really helped us optimize the proposition for the consumer themselves or the user, and also for our customers, quite frankly. It's a big bet for them too.
So I think it's interesting because when I think of PepsiCo and I think of one word that it associates with it, it's beverage, right? So with SodaStream Professional, like Peter mentioned, it's a technology company. Was it hard or difficult to get PepsiCo to actually think like a technology company?
I think there are some unique aspects. I think some of the behaviors of PepsiCo are technology-friendly behaviors. I would say in terms of we tend to be pretty agile. We tend to have a real bias for action. We're obviously in the product development and launch business. What we had to lift and shift was the kind of mindset to just launch those products and develop those products in a tech-enabled way. I mean, most consumers wouldn't see SodaStream Professional as a technology per se. They would see it as a place to go get a beverage. It's tech-enabled in that sense. What we've done is accommodated their behaviors, mobile, authenticated. Peter, to your point, coming back to that, we did not actually launch it contactless. We've just made that evolution essentially to adapt for COVID. It didn't require a lot of screen touching, but you still had to press to pour, for example. We've modified that to make sure that now we can accommodate those touchless needs. So I think high level, that was the approach. I do think, Kelsey, to your question, that as a company, as a packaged goods company, you know, do we have the all the capabilities we need to be a, call it a technology-driven company? No, but we're definitely building them. And, you know, we've got great IT organization and, you know, we've stood up an e-com business over the course of the last, you know, 6 or 7 years that's really helped accelerate our understanding of, you know, a, you know, more of a technology forward route to market, which has been super useful. But we got more technologies to lean into and build, and you know, we got to get better at things like performance marketing.
It's interesting that my CFO is actually a former PepsiCo guy early in his career, and he was really excited that we were talking today, and he was waxing poetic about his experience at PepsiCo back in the early 80s, and one of the things that he talked about is something you just mentioned, Scott, was the agility that PepsiCo has. And the other thing, if you think about how do you act like a software company, you know, we probably get, you know, having, since I run a software company, I know we probably get more credit than we deserve sometimes for being what we are. But the key things that you tend to think about are being agile and being analytical. And I think those are just really core capabilities of PepsiCo. So you can see how you can operate in that environment. And in doing that as a large company, especially because you seem to have a very agile brand strategy, which is helpful. One of the things I wanted to ask you about is the, you know, I was looking through one of the recent PepsiCo annual reports before we were chatting, and I saw that SodaStream was actually referenced prominently in the annual report. You talked about this a little bit earlier, but how do you see sort of that SodaStream brand, some of those brand values sort of contributing to the overall PepsiCo brand over time? It seems like that idea of sort of the eco-friendly approach seems to be pretty central to the strategy of what PepsiCo is trying to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I refer to that as the mission or purpose-driven linkage, right? I think SodaStream, I think the projected numbers on the SodaStream acquisition as part of our PepsiCo commitments are that it'll take 67 billion single-use bottles out of the world between now and 2025. So, you know, that's a fairly big number, and that's a fantastic impact to have on the planet and a problem to solve that, you know, I think we all care deeply about, and we care for ourselves and our children and future generations. And that's one that's super tangible, right? I mean, we see that when we're out and about. So I think that's the first. I think to your point, like SodaStream's in coming out of Tel Aviv, there's a culture of just venturing and startups and technology and growth there. And man, some of the people at SodaStream that I've had the pleasure of working with, man, they are just like, you know, action oriented, you know, moving fast, you know, cut to the chase. And I think, you know, that's something in the world we now live in that I think is increasingly important. It was important last year. I think it's even more important now because we're all living through an unprecedented a pace of change and dynamism, right? None of us knows what the future holds. We didn't know it before, but at least we had a better sense. It was a little more predictable. Now it's really hard to predict, right? I mean, good luck predicting what the dynamic in a lot of our biggest food service channels looks like, you know, come November. Channels like workplace and college are super important to us. Those are big businesses for us. And they're really important to the way, you know, the American economy and America in general works. So these are massive structural challenges, you know, being handled at the highest and lowest levels of government. And, you know, it's incredibly dynamic. So SodaStream, one small part of helping us, you know, move fast, be nimble, be agile, be responsive, and some of the things that, yeah, we need. I think the other thing that SodaStream does, and we talk a lot about at PepsiCo, is acting like an owner. I think these guys have a very strong sense of ownership for their business and their brand. And that comes through when you work together with them. And that's something that is increasingly important for us as a company too.
Well, that's great. It makes a lot of sense. And I'm still trying to get my head around it. You said 67 billion plastic containers that not only aren't in circulation, but aren't created, right? So the amount of energy conserved, not having to initially create those things, is just a little mind-boggling. It's hard to get your head around.
So one
of the things I'd love to get an understanding of, Scott, is, you know, our listeners are, and me by proxy, are marketing nerds, right? And we love to understand sort of how you think about a launch campaign for the SodaStream professional. So give us a sense, high level, what does the launch campaign look like for this kind of a ambitious product range?
Yeah, the way we're building a tiered set of programs to essentially support our different customers, but they're very user-driven, almost grassroots, because the key on this proposition that we've learned is once you can build awareness and some initial trial and usage behind this platform, people love it and they'll come back over and over again. So this is very much about that that early stage building of behavior. So our program is very locally connected to the different customers and the context that the user's in. So we're doing things like, you know, obviously making sure we're offering things like, you know, what are five free pours as an example to get you started, just to build the habit. You know, in some cases we're offering a vessel to be a part of that with the QR code that you referenced earlier that allows you to authenticate and connect with your bottle without even needing to do it with your phone. So we've got a tiered set of programs to do that. You're not going to see a massive national media program in support of this. I think the results and the ROI is going to be driven by a very local user-driven campaign.
Yeah, and how do you think about the goals for a campaign like this? You know, what you don't have to tell me the specific numbers, but give me a sense for the kinds of objectives you might put in place for this kind of a launch campaign.
Yeah, I mean, there's a set of business objectives, right, in terms of, you know, what's the volume, what are the number of pours, the frequency of usage. And that's for us as well as our customers, you know, as they essentially take on these businesses together with us. But then the other component is the user experience. And what we're going to be measuring is a very, very individual level. Again, what's the usage level? What's the frequency level? We're going to be building that behavior at a very kind of building block level, and that's what we're going to be tracking. So those are the two pillars of how we're going to do this.
Well, that's great, and it's such a data-connected kind of system, I think. And because I know you are quite focused on gathering data and insights, I think this is going to be really a rich source of data and understanding, maybe more than others. Although I assume a lot of your other product lines are data connected too, right? So do you also have other real-time data sources like this in other products?
We have other products. I used to work in the retail side of the business, and we worked to stand up these different products that give us a much richer understanding of households and people to understand their behavior longitudinally, which I think is really important. And then what SodaStream Professional does, if you think about it, and I'm sure your head has already gone there, is it allows us to build a portfolio of, I'll call them nodes under SodaStream, right? So, you know, when we get back to quote unquote normal and you're in the house using your SodaStream unit, and then you move to the office and you use SodaStream Professional, or you go to, you know, you go to school and you're using the unit there, what we're able to do is resolve your full spectrum of hydration needs, or at least a greater number of those. We're able to essentially, understand your behavior across those different touch points over the course of the day. And most importantly, we're able to find the right balance in helping you achieve those, right? So what have you said that you want to accomplish? How do we help you do that? So that's the exciting vision, I think, for the broader SodaStream portfolio. Twilio, and you can, I think, get a sense for the role that insights and data and technology are going to play in achieving that.
Great. And where, how rolled out is the product line now? Can people see it in real life? And is it fairly broadly geographically dispersed yet?
It's we've done beta and we're launching in August, September. So we're putting essentially starting our scale up in August, September, more and more people will have the opportunity to experience the platform.
Well, great. I know it's good timing with a lot of people coming back to school. As we were chatting before we started here, my youngest is starting as a freshman in college, so I'll have her eyes peeled, hopefully, that she'll start seeing the SodaStream professional line at her university come the fall. So that would be great.
I'm assuming part of your selection criteria or hers, a college that pours PepsiCo products.
That is right? Correct, and of course.
There were other criteria that potentially came into play, but shortlisted, right?
Yes, shortlisted. That and proximity to bars and entertainment tend to be the most important things. So that's great.
Scott, one thing we talked about is to be agile, and pandemic, we've had to pivot a lot of our marketing strategy, but what are you excited about in the next year or two for PepsiCo and also for SodaStream Professional?
With SodaStream Professional, I'm excited to really get the platform out, start scaling it, and start giving those users that experience, and then testing and learning and building something that has a massive sustainable impact on the environment from a purpose point of view, and I think helps people achieve their hydration goals. And what we learned about people and their hydration goals was they're very much enablers of their broader, goals and aspirations in their life. And they talk about hydration that way. So, we can feel really good about the way we're helping people, achieve what they want over the course of their lives, whether it's to be a better mother or father or a better student or get their next job, et cetera. So it's really cool to try and help people in that regard. I think more broadly on the COVID front, we have been doing a lot of pivoting. We've been super responsive, and I'm proud about the way we've helped people, both within our own organization in terms of making sure everyone's safe and healthy. Certainly our customers and folks in the industry, and in particular in the restaurant industry, I think we've done some really good work there from helping out the restaurant relief group with the National Restaurant Association and helping raise $24 million there, which, it's just a huge help to a lot of different people in an industry that we care deeply about. And also as an industry that I think we all as people, just want back. We want it to survive and be healthy at the national level, at the local level, so we can all get back out there and have that fun with our family and friends and share those moments together. So super excited about that work. And also we've done some great work on the schools front. One of the, less talked about consequences of this has been when you shut schools, an awful lot of kids don't have the resources to have breakfast and lunch, never mind a healthy breakfast lunch. So, we've done some work in partnership with No Kid Hungry to help support that as well. So I think as a company and a food service marketing team, we've been, we've done some work that I'm proud of in different ways than we sometimes maybe have been proud in the past in terms of just being super helpful. And it's a time, I think, to do that. And then one more area that I'm excited about is you might have seen our commitments that we made as PepsiCo to help address structural racism and racial equality. And man, we've made a sustained 5-year commitment of $400 million as a company to really make progress against that. It's not a kind of a short-term effort. It's a sustained long-term effort. It's internal and external. And our team is really energized to lead the support of Black-owned local restaurants. And we've been doing a lot of work in that front and doing a lot of work to listen and to understand and make sure that, we understand what the problems to solve are and how can we best help those over time. So that is something I've got a ton of energy for, and the team is pumped about, and I think we really care, and we think it's important for us to do that well.
That's great. I did see, read a little bit about your efforts to address structural racism, and you're absolutely right in your approach. You see a lot of sort of short-term flash-in-the-pan kind of efforts, but it's going to take a real sustained effort to make a change, obviously. And it's really exciting that companies who have the resources, like a PepsiCo, are committed to make a long-term change, because I think that's the only way we're gonna get all of the built-in inertia in the system to move. So we really appreciate what you're doing there.
Yeah. I think I'll just bring it back to, what's the role of a CMO, right? And I think as a CMO, you've got to pick your spots, right? Where, as I like to say, are you bringing energy and focus? There's 100 things you can do in a week or a day, and can't do them all well. And I think this is an example of where, in speaking to your audience, this is important, and it's easy to, some companies are going to do it well and others aren't, but, take the opportunity to decide, what side you're on and what choice you want to make. It's a fantastic opportunity to lead organizations, to lead culture, to lead change, and to build your brands and build your business along the way. So just to kind of break the fourth wall for a second and speak to the audience, I think it's a good chance to do that. Yeah, come along every day.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree that you have to pick your battles to focus as a CMO, because it's a target rich environment. And like you said, you can't do everything. So you have to pick the things that have the most impact. A couple quick last questions, because I know we're getting to the end of our time. One is, tell me about what CMOs do you look up to for inspiration for what you do?
Yeah, and then a couple that I'll mention, Fernando Machado at Burger King, he probably comes up a lot. I don't know him personally, but man, he and his team, they are just so connected to culture, and they've just woven creativity into their organization in a way that, I think what they essentially produce and create on an ongoing basis is, is so strong as a result. And there's so many different examples of that. So I'm an admirer from afar of him and the work that his team does. An ex-PepsiCo guy, Rick Gomez, we're at Target. Rick is, I think, outstanding in just in terms of the way he leads and develops his team, the empathy he brings for people, and also for his consumer guests, as they call them at Target, and the way he's, I think, expanding the portfolio of brands at Target and growing that business and just doing it in a way that is really, really genuine. So, I admire the work that he does as well. So there's a couple.
That's great. And I won't feel badly for being left off the list, because I've actually retired from my CMO role over the last few years as I took on the role as CEO of Planna. So otherwise, I'm sure I would have been mentioned.
But
in
your
the
daughter started at a Pepsi school, then I might have had a different answer.
Exactly. That's right. I think we have one, our favorite question. Kelsey, why don't you bring us home with the last question here?
I mean, this is our favorite question. This is why the next CMO was built upon. This is what we created this podcast for. So what advice would you give to current or aspiring CMOs?
A couple of things I'd say. One, just be grounded in the consumer. It's really easy not to be, and no one else in your entire business is going to own the consumer. And I say consumer because it's easier for people to hear, but it's really about people, right? And you got to understand them, collectively as their total selves. They're not shoppers and consumers, they're people. So understand them that way and ground your plans and lead your organization through people. The second thing I'd say is you've got to set a clear agenda. At PepsiCo, we say, if you don't set an agenda, someone's going to give it to you. So you have to have that agenda. You have to set that vision. And then I think the other thing I'd say is be bold. We have, Roger Enrico used to talk about the tyranny of incrementalism. And that was this sense that doing small things would lead to some kind of big change, and it doesn't. So I think in the marketing organization, you have the opportunity through that consumer understanding to really be bold on behalf of your organization. So those are a few things I'd leave your audience with.
Love it. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Scott. It was such a pleasure being able to pick your brain as one of the most well-known brands in the world as a CMO. So be sure to check out SodaStream Professional. You can find the information in the show notes of this podcast, and make sure to follow The Next CMO and Plana on Twitter and LinkedIn. If you have any ideas for topics or guests, you can email them to thenext@plana.com. Have a great day, everyone.